Good morning, everybody. Welcome back. Three ideas in 30 minutes. Get us energized and ready for this Shabbos, this week's Parsha, Parsha's Truma, also Parsha's Zachar. Countdown to Purim begins. It's hard to believe we are a year. We are a year away from last Purim. Really unbelievable, incredible to think about. But one of the great parts of this past year, the silver lining, is that you and I have started learning on Friday morning. I cherish this time. I love this time. And I hope you do as well. As always, I want to thank our sponsor for this week's sponsor, anonymously in memory of Teddy Kellen, Shimon Tovia Ben Dov, Yehuda Leib Chaim. Anyone interested in sponsoring a future episode of Three Ideas in 30 Minutes is welcome to contact the Shul office. We appreciate anything and we appreciate everything. As addition, for those who are not BRS members, you know that we are in the middle of, or we are concluding, our fundraising campaign to help support many of the learning initiatives at Boca Raton Synagogue. Now, whether or not you care about giving to Boca Raton Synagogue, Rabbi Brody and I are neck and neck right now. And to second place, obviously Rabbi Goldberg walked away with it. That makes sense. He is the Morad Asra. He is the senior rabbi. But Rabbi Brody and I are neck and neck. And, well, let's just say I'm a little bit competitive sometimes. So if you are not a BRS member and you have not yet donated to the BRS Global Campaign, I encourage you to go online, www.brsonline.org/global, and help give me bragging rights that I can go. It's all l'shem shamayim. We're all joking. It all goes to great causes, zero overhead. It's all to support and promote the Torah that we are able to provide worldwide on a constant basis. Okay, here we go. Three ideas in 30 minutes. I used to say it's a short Friday, but now the Fridays are getting longer. Maybe we'll go to four ideas in 30 minutes. Who knows? Maybe we'll do a bonus idea today if I'm able to pull ahead of Rabbi Brody during this class. So let's jump right in. The first idea comes from a beautiful idea from the Sfas Emes. Sfas Emes points out that there is a Rashi, a very troubling flow of Rashis. Rashi tells us that when Moshe Rabbeinu is told about the menorah, so he's very confused, right? Shenisgasha Moshe Rabbeinu b'maisa menorah. Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't know what to do with the menorah. He doesn't know how to make it. He's a little bit confused. Veheru HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Hashem shows him the menorah. Umikodem Kasiv, the Sfas Emes points out, that before that it's written, Te'aseh HaMenorah, that you are supposed to make the menorah. And over there, Rashi says, She'od Niskashe Moshe Rabbeinu Alav HaShalom, that Moshe Rabbeinu again was confused, he was finding it difficult to conceive what exactly the menorah would look like. Ve'amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ashlech Kikar La'or V'yanasim Atzmo. Don't worry about it, throw it into the fire and I'll take care of it myself. Ask the Sfas Emes. Im kein kasha lama herehu. If Hashem knew that Moshe Rabbeinu was going to struggle with the construction of the menorah, why did he bother showing it to him in the first place? Right? It's the equivalent of you bringing a car to me. You opening up the hood of the car and saying, Moskowitz, I want you to recreate the inside of a car. You might as well be talking to an alien at that point, right? I have no idea what you're talking about. There's no way I'd ever be able to recreate it. So at the end of the process, you come back to me and say, you know what, don't worry about it. Just give me $10 and I'll take care of it myself. So I would come to you, I say, what was your havamina? Why would you ever have thought that I would be able to, in the first place, recreate the inside of a car? I have no experience of it. There's no manual for it. There's no playbook for it. Why do you think that I would be able to do that? And so says the Sfas Emes over here as well. Im kein kasha lama herehu. Why does Hashem bother showing it to Moshe in the first place? Halo yada habore yisbarach. Hashem knows. Ki lo yucha lasoso. He knows that Moshe is not going to be able to do it. Achin vadai lo nase legamrei meatzmo. Rak al yidei sherehu visigu Moshe Rabbeinu bidaito. Vahaya muchan lasoso. Answers the Sfas Emes something beautifully. Says the Sfas Emes that it was important for Moshe to see it first, and for Moshe in his mind to be prepared to engage in the action. Af ki b'maisa b'poel, even though in actuality, lo haya yachol lasoso, even though Moshe wouldn't actually be able to do that, b'chol zos al yedei ha'achana, b'daito lasoso. Nonetheless, since he was prepared to do it in his mind, al yedei ze nigmar ma'atzmo, that's what allowed it to actually become completed. Says the Sfas Emes, why does Hashem show it to Moshe? If he knows that Moshe is not going to be able to do it anyways, if he knows that it's going to be too complicated and too confusing and there's no manual and there's no guidebook, why did Hashem think, what was Hashem's hava amina? says this Vasemis, you're getting it all wrong. Hashem knew that Moshe was going to need help. And Hashem was prepared to give Moshe that help. Why then was it so important for Moshe to look at it first and for Moshe to be prepared to do it? Says the Sfas Emes that when a person is prepared to conduct a certain action, when a person is prepared to participate in a mitzvah, even if we're not able to complete it, even when it comes to us actually bringing that action to fruition, Eino yachol la'asoso, I'm not able to do it. Al yedei havtacha lios nasa me'atzmo. Right? That because I tried, because I committed myself, because I was willing to put in the effort, so then Hashem meets me the rest of the way. And that, he says, is the pasuk in Tehillim. In Tehillim, nun zayin la'el gomer elai. It's definitely not the pshat of the pasuk, but la'el gomer elai means Hashem who is gomer, Hashem who finishes it for me. Right? If I'm willing to put in the effort, even if I know with certainty that I'm likely not going to be able to finish the task, but if I'm willing to put in the effort, says the Sfas Emes, the message of the menorah is that Hashem will meet you halfway. That Hashem will help you, he'll give you the siyata d'shmaya to complete and finish the process. I think this is such a beautiful idea. First of all, it's a wonderful reading of Rashi. I think it's a great question on Rashi, right? If Hashem knew that Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't going to be able to do it, why bother showing it to him in the first place? The answer is that by showing it to Moshe, Moshe had to want. He had to want to engage in it. And Hashem says, if you committed yourself to do it, if you were willing to put in the effort, even if you have no chance of success, then my promise to you is that I'll help you finish the rest of the way. Then I'll help you complete the task. I'll give you the siyata d'shmaya to get to the destination that you were always meant to get to. And the reason why I love this idea is because so often, one of the reasons why you and I don't even try, whether it's in physical aspirations or more importantly in our spiritual aspirations, one of the reasons we don't even try is because we figure, I'm not going to be able to complete it anyways. I'm not going to be able to be successful anyways. Start Daf Yomi. I've never learned a page of Gemara in my life. It's in Aramaic. It's a commitment. It's daily. It takes 45 minutes, an hour every day. Not something I can do. Says the Sfas Emes, that's the wrong approach. Rather, if you are willing to commit yourself, if you are willing to get off the couch and try to get off the sidelines and move into the ring, as Teddy Roosevelt famously said, I believe it was Teddy Roosevelt, right? If you are willing to get off the sideline and into the ring, then Hashem says, I will give you that siyata d'shmaya. How many people have finished shas over and over again who never thought they were going to be able to? Why? Because they started one page. And one page became 2 pages, and 2 pages became 3 pages. And if it's not shas, then it could be chumash and rashi. And if it's not chumash and rashi, maybe it's just reading through the parsha once a week. And you say, how could I do that time, energy? The answer is you got to try. Says this Sfas Emes, that Sheher Ehu, Hashem showed it to Moshe, not because he thought Moshe was going to be able to complete the task, but because he wanted Moshe to commit in his mind that he was going to try to complete the task. And Hashem, Le'el Gomer Eli, Hashem comes forth and says that if you are willing to put in that effort, if you are willing to commit yourself to a spiritual project, obviously, or, right, why did Hashem say to throw it into the fire? Because or, says this Sfas Emes, means Torah. Shall yedei ha'yegiyah b'torah nitken ha'maisa gamkein. That when you and I commit ourselves to spiritual aspirations, l'shem shamayim, for the right reason, then le'el gomer elai, Hashem says, I will help you complete the task. I will help you make sure that you finish it. I will help you make sure that it comes to fruition. So that's idea number one, based on the Sfas Emes. Why does Hashem show it to Moshe if he knows he's not going to be successful? The answer is that Hashem didn't need Moshe to be successful. Hashem needed Moshe to want it. Hashem needed Moshe to put in the effort. Hashem needed Moshe to commit himself to a spiritual ambition. And Hashem says, if you're willing to do that, then I'm willing to meet you the rest of the way. I'm willing to give you the siyata d'shmaya necessary to complete that task. That is idea number one. Now, as I mentioned oftentimes in our 3 ideas in 30 minutes, one of the things I struggle with is when I have a favorite idea, when do I share it? Do I go first? But then it's like, we have this concept, malim bekodesh, so you have to build up to the best one. On the other hand, if I leave the best one for the end, maybe some of you won't like the first two and you'll drop out. So it's a conflict I have. So today I'm sharing the middle. Second idea, favorite idea. Now, what makes it my favorite idea? First of all, I think it's a beautiful idea, the message I'm going to share with you. But the reason why I love it so much is I've never seen it before. And I love new ideas, and I love ideas that are out of the box and that I wasn't exposed to previously. So this is an idea that I came across this year. I've never seen it before. Maybe you have, and I'm just an Am Haaretz, which is entirely possibility. But I think it's a very cool idea. And the idea goes as follows. We all know that there are two individuals who are charged with building the Mishkan. They are Bezalel and Aholiab. Now, which Shvatim are they from? Which tribes are they from? This is a very cool idea. So we know that Bezalel is from the tribe of Yehuda. And Aholiab is from the tribe of Dan. Right? Now listen to what the Medrash says. The Medrash says, this is by a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, Uraaya ben Shoval holidet yachad v'yachad holidet achumai ve'et lahad. So the Medrash wants to know, what's lahad? So, davar acher, lahad, amar Rabbi Abba barchia, shehadal shebishvatim midabek lo. That lahad is about Bezalel. And why is Bezalel called lahad? Because the dal, the lowest of the tribes, midabek lo, the lowest of the tribes connected to him. What does that mean? Continues the Medrash. Amar Rav Chanina ben Pazi, ein lecha gadol mishevet Yehuda. There's no greater tribe than Shevet Yehuda. Bezalel comes from the tribe of Yehuda. Ve'ein lecha yarud mishevet Dan. And there's no lowly tribe. The most inferior tribe is that of Dan. Says the Medrash, what happens? Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yavo v'yizdaveg lo. That the tribe of Yehuda and the tribe of Dan should come together, the highest of the tribes and the lowest of the tribes should come together to participate in building the Mishkan. Now, lest you say, what's the big deal? So you have Yehuda, you have Dan, you have the highest of the tribes, you have the lowest of the tribes. Maybe this is an anomaly. Well, it's not an anomaly because we see this pattern play out over and over again. So, for example, by the Beis HaMikdash in Malachim Aleph, which we studied in my Tanakh class 4 years ago now. It's hard to believe. Time flies when you're having fun. But 4 years ago, we studied Malachim Aleph. And you'll remember that when Shlomo goes to build the Beis HaMikdash, Shlomo, of course, is from what Shevet? It's from Shevet Yehuda, right? Who provides the wood to enable them to build the Beis HaMikdash? None other than Chiram. Chiram, the pasuk in Divrei Hayamim says, right? He is Mibnos Dan. That his mother came from the tribe of Dan. Wow, and that's in Divrei Hayamim Beis, Perek Bet, pasuk Yud Gimel. So Chiram comes from the tribe of Dan. So you have Shlomo from Yehuda, and you have Chiram from Dan. So we have this play out by the Mishkan. Aholiab and Bezalel. Bezalel is from Yehuda. Aholiab is from Dan. We have this in the Beis HaMikdash, where Shlomo is from Yehuda and Chiram is Dan. You see now why I think this is such a cool idea. And here's the clincher. Mashiach ben David. Mashiach ben David, of course. There's first going to be Mashiach ben Yosef, and then there's going to be Mashiach ben David. Who is Mashiach ben David from? Which tribe? So you and I know this answer. Mashiach ben David. David is from the Shevet of Yehuda. That's Malchus Yehuda. But listen to Yalkut Shimoni. This is going to blow your mind away, right? Gur Aryeh Yehuda says the Yalkut Shimoni in Vayechi. Ze Mashiach ben David. This is Mashiach ben David. Sheyatza Mishnei Shvatim. That Mashiach ben David is going to come from two Shvatim. Aviv Me Yehuda. Yes, his father is going to be from the tribe of Yehuda. V'imo midan, and his mother, says the Yalkut Shimoni, is going to come from the tribe of Dan. So we have it by the Mishkan, we have it by the Mikdash, and we have it by Mashiach, that it has to be this combination of both the tribe of Yehuda and the tribe of Dan. Now, why is that the case? Why is it? So if we go back to our original Midrash, the original Midrash had said, right? She'ein lecha gadol mishevet Yehuda, that there's no greater tribe than Yehuda, and ve'ein lecha, and there's no lower, right? Ve'ein lecha yarud mishevet Dan, and there's no lower tribe, there's no more inferior tribe than the tribe of Dan. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says they have to come together. Why? That's the million-dollar question right now. So let's just summarize our question. Our question is that Betzalel comes from the Shevet of Yehuda, or Aliyah comes from the Shevet of Dan. We see this play out over and over again by the Mikdash, where Yehuda is from Yehuda, and Hiram is from Dan. We see it by Mashiach, where his father is going to be from Yehuda, his mother is going to be from Dan. The Medrash goes out of its way to say that Yehuda is the highest, Dan is the most inferior, and there has to be this zivug, there has to be this connection between the two of them. Why? Listen to what the Medrash says. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yavo V'Yizdaveg Lo. Come, and the two of them should combine. They should, by our forces, combined. Why? Shelo yihyu mivazin oso. That nobody should be embarrassed. No one should put anyone lower. No one should mock anyone else. Vishelo yihyu adam rucho gisa alav. And no one should be haughty. And no one should be arrogant. In other words, no one should think that they're any better or any worse than the other person. Why? Levisha hagadol vehakatan shavin lifnei hamakom. That is the clincher. Lifnei shehagadol ve'akatan shavin lifnei ha'adam. That when it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hagadol, even the great, the tribe of Yehuda, ve'katan, the tribe of Dan, shavin lifnei hamakom. That when it comes to external qualities that impress people, they are meaningless in the eyes of Hashem. Hashem does not care what tribe you are from. Hashem does not care about your socioeconomic status. Hashem does not care how many material resources you have. Hashem does not care whether you live on the circle, off the circle, in Boca, whether you're part of the BRS global community. Hashem does not care what development you live in. None of this matters in the eyes of Hashem. Rather, what does? Kshagadol v'katan shavin lifnei amakum. That everyone is equal before Hashem. That the external differences that we place on ourselves, they are meaningless in the eyes of God. So you're from Yehuda and I'm from Dan. Guess what? Both of us have an equal chelek in the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Each of us have an equal chelek in the building of the Mishkan. Each of us are going to be worthy of Mashiach coming, because they're both the combination of Shevet Yehuda on the one hand and Shevet Dan on the other hand. This beautiful line of the Gemara, the Medrash, Lefisha Gadol Ve'akatan Shavin Lifnei Amakom, because everyone is equal in the eyes of Hashem. What a beautiful, magnificent idea. What a gorgeous vort. If some of you have heard that before, I apologize. I'd never heard it before. I got so excited when I saw it. I pieced some of the Meir Makomos together, and I think it's such a beautiful idea. So that is idea number two. Idea number one was from the Sfas Emes, about why does Hashem show it to Moshe if he knows Moshe will not be able to do it on his own and he's going to have to help him out anyways. The answer is because Hashem wanted Moshe to commit himself to a spiritual project. And even if he knew Moshe wouldn't be able to complete it, Hashem says, if you commit yourself, I'm going to help you out. That is a message for every single one of us. We should never allow the fear of failure to hold us back. We should put in our effort. We should try new things. And then daven for siyata deshmaya for Hashem to help us be successful. Idea number two is this gorgeous idea. Why is two people instructed or commanded to build the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan, Ahaliyav and Betzalel, two different Shvatim, Yehuda and Dan, why do they have to be together? We see it by the Mikdash, we see it by Mashiach as well. The answer is, She'agadol ve'akatan shavin livnei amakom. It's a reminder that everyone is equal in the eyes of Hashem, that the external differences that we place upon ourselves, the stereotypes, it's all irrelevant to Hashem. All Hashem cares about, as I wrote about in the weekly, Rachmana Liba Bai. Hashem wants our heart. Hashem wants our soul. Hashem wants to give Him our kishkas. That's what Hashem wants from us. That's idea number two. Idea number three comes from a different part of the Parsha, and that is the actual construction of the Mishkan. Amidst the discussion of the destruction of the Mishkan, it talks about the krushim, the wooden planks. And the Medrash over there comments, Amar Ravi Chanina, Lohaya ha'olam roi lishtamesh ba'arazim, that the world was not worthy of using cedar trees, ella shelo nivru ella bishvil ha'mishkan u'bishvil beis ha'mikdash, that these krushim, the world was not worthy of them, but, right, the only thing that they were worthy of was the Mishkan and the Mikdash. And the obvious question is, what in the world is the Medrash trying to teach us? Right, why was the world unworthy of cedar trees? And if they're unworthy of the cedar trees, then why did Hashem make an exception for the building of the Mishkan in the Mikdash? Let me share with you a magnificent idea from Rav Menachem ben Sion Sachs, his work Menachem Sion, gorgeous idea. He says that in general, classically, cedar trees are used in rabbinic literature as a symbol of inflexibility, as a symbol of rigidity, as a symbol of stubbornness. The Gemara in Tainus tells us, Tanu Rabbanan, La'olam ye adam rach kikane, ve'al yehe kashe ke'erez, that a person should always be as soft as a reed and not as rigid as a cedar. In other words, a person who's consistently unyielding and stubborn, insists on always following his idea and his own wishes, is likened to a sturdy cedar tree that remains upright and never bends. The Medrash says, don't be like that. In other words, no one wants that unyielding stubbornness, right? Should never have been brought in the world. And so, in order for us to all work together, in order for all of us to live in peace and harmony, right, says the Gemara in Tainus, people have to be prepared to bend. They have to yield. They have to understand that there are people who have different interests and different beliefs and different ways of looking at the world, and that's okay, right? So says the Menachem Sion, that's what the Medrash is telling us, that when it comes to interpersonal relationships, Amar Rabbi Chanina, lo haya olam roi lishtamish be'arazim, cedar trees should never have been created. Knows we need to be the opposite of the cedar tree. That don't be so rigid and inflexible that you're unwilling to compromise. Don't be so narrow-minded that you only tolerate people who agree with you and reject anyone who disagrees with you. Right? But be willing to learn from other people's perspective. Have a little bit of humility. Right? Too much rigidity is destructive for society in a peaceful society. Right? And yet, how does the Medrash end? And this is such a beautiful idea from the Menachem Tzion. Right? We should not be like cedar trees. How does the Medrash end? Ella lo nivru, ella bishvil hamishkan, ubishvil beis hamikdash. But it was created for the Mishkan in the beis hamikdash. In other words, despite all of this, despite that in our interpersonal relationships, we should not be like cedar wood. When it comes to our religious principles, so then that sense of stubbornness is the highest virtue. Then, says the Medrash, you need to be stiff and you need to be rigid. You need to stand strong for what you believe in. That don't let the winds of society dictate what's important to you and what's not important to you. But be strong and stand for your conviction and for the values that matter most to you. And so when society comes along and tells you that certain forms of dress are inappropriately, says the Medrash, be like a cedar tree. And when society tells you that certain images are acceptable, we should be like a cedar tree. And when people around us tolerate things that we should never tolerate, like hatred and bigotry, so we should be like a cedar tree. Right, never giving in on our values of respect and tolerance and decency, but also unequivocally rejecting things that are inappropriate. That we should be like a tree, and we should never allow our values to be swayed. And so says the Menachem Tzion, that this Medrash actually represents the difference in approach between our interpersonal relationships and our relationship when it comes to L'shem Shamayim, when it comes to our relationship with Torah and Mitzvos. That when it comes to interpersonal relationships, lo haya olam roi lishtamish be'arazim, we have to be the opposite of cedar trees. Don't be stubborn. Don't be so rigid. Don't insist on always following your own perspective and never listening to anyone else. Be willing to compromise. Don't be so narrow-minded and assume that you're always correct. But what were these cedar trees created for? Ela bishvil hamishkan ubishvil beis hamikdash. But they were created for the Mishkan and the beis hamikdash. Because when it comes to our religious observance, when the winds of society are pushing us in this way and that and always telling us to do things that sometimes feel antithetical to what our authentic Jewish values are, then it's appropriate to be like a cedar tree. Then we have to stand strong for what we believe in, a life of Torah and mitzvos and immortality. That is what we stand for. Beautiful idea from the Menachem Tzion. So we saw three ideas so far. We saw the idea of the Sfas Emes, that why did Hashem show it to Moshe if he knew he couldn't be successful? Because Hashem wanted Moshe to put in the effort. Idea number two. Why did the Mishkan and the Mikdash and Mashiach have to come from the two tribes of Yehuda and Dan? Says the Medrash, Levisha Agado ve'akaton shavim lifnei ha'makom, so that we should realize that we are all equal in the eyes of Hashem. That Hashem loves each one of us equally. And no matter where you are in life, and no matter what your status is, socioeconomic, no matter, it doesn't matter. Hashem loves all of us. And he wants that relationship with all of us. And all of us have that relationship with Torah and mitzvos, the Mishkan and the Mikdash and Mashiach and salvation and redemption. Rachmana li babai, all Hashem wants is us, where we are with all of our warts and all of our imperfections. That's what Hashem wants. That's all Hashem asks for. And then the last idea, this beautiful idea from the Menachem Tzion of this Medrash, that we should not be like cedar trees. It was only created for the Mishkan and the Mikdash. What did that mean? So he said the cedar trees represents that focus on inflexibility and rigidity and stubbornness. So says the Medrash, when it comes to our interpersonal relationships, don't be like that. You have to be a little bit more open-minded. You have to be open to other people's perspectives. But when it comes to the Mishkan and the Mikdash, when it comes to our relationship with Torah and mitzvos, relationship to Judaism, yeah, then we have to be a little bit rigid. Then we have to be a little bit inflexible. When some people tell us that things are permissive when they're really not, go against halacha, that's when we have to be a little bit careful. Now, I shared three ideas, but I promised you at the beginning there's going to be a bonus idea. It's Parsha Zachar, it's a mitzvah d'oraisa, we should do a little bit to prepare for it. So I'm going to share a bonus idea. 3 minutes, here you go. I shared it at Mincha Maariv last night, but I don't think any of you were there. Here we go. Amalek, Parsha Amalek, we have to mevichias Amalek. So of course Amalek isn't just a people, but it's a concept. That Amalek represents a philosophy, a shkafa, which is the antithetical to everything we believe in. What was the problem with Amalek? So the Chassidish Sfarim point out that the numerical value of Amalek is 240, which also equals the numerical value of the word safek, doubt. That what Amalek tried to do is get us to doubt Hashem. Now what were they doubting about God? Did they not believe God existed? Right? Did they not acknowledge that God created the world? What were they doubting about Hashem? And so the Sfarim point out that there's an additional gematria, which links itself to Amalek, and I love this one. And that is that the gematria of Amalek, 240, is also the gematria of the word Ram, Resh Mem, which means very high up. That what Amalek wanted us to think was that Hashem is Ram, that Hashem is high up. That yes, Hashem created the heavens and the earth, He created the world and the universe, but you know what? He's Ram. He sits up in the heavens. He wants nothing to do with me and you. He wants no relationship with us. He doesn't care what happens in my mundane, everyday, trivial life. Hashem is Ram, right? Did Hashem create the world? Amalek says, yes, great, Hashem created the world. Right, did Hashem create the heavens and the moons and the stars? Yes, we'll acknowledge that. Hashem created all of that. But Hashem is Ram. He's above you. He's transcendent. You can't have a relationship with Him, says Amalek. And so the way we perform Mechias Amalek, the way we remember Amalek, is by reminding ourselves over and over again, every single day, we're the opposite. That yes, Hashem is Ram. Yes, Hashem is great. And yes, Hashem is big. And yes, Hashem created the heavens and the sun and the moon and the stars. But you know what else? Hashem cares about you. And Hashem cares about me. And He cares about what happens in our lives. And He cares about the things that worry me and the anxieties that keep me up at night. And He cares about the doctor's appointment that I have next week. Hashem cares about all of that. And so Amalek tried to convince us that Hashem is Ram, that Hashem is too big, that Hashem is great, and He doesn't care about little old me and you. But where in fact, the opposite is exactly the truth. That yes, Hashem is great. Kadosh, kadosh, kadosh. Yes, Hashem, you are distant. You are transcendent. In a certain respect, you are inaccessible. But despite that, it's Hamashpili the Rosh Bashamayim of Aretz, as we learned right the other week in our Tehillim class, that Hashem is willing to get into the garbage with us, that Hashem is willing to lower Himself into this world to help us and to care about us and to love us and to tend for us, right? So Amalek wants to convince us that Hashem is big. We have to remind ourselves that yes, Hashem is big, but He's also small. He also cares about us. It's not beneath Him to come and to worry about the same things that you and I are worrying about, and to have to share in our anxiety and to share in our pain and suffering and our simcha and our joy. That is what it means to have a relationship with Hashem. That is where Judaism differentiated itself from the philosophy of Amalek. So that was a bonus round, something to think about as we go into Shabbos, Parsha Zachor. We remember what Amalek tried to convince us of, and therefore we reaffirm our belief that Hashem doesn't just create the heavens and the earth, but Hashem cares about every single moment of our lives for every single one of us. That is the greatness of our relationship with the Borei Olam. With that, I bid everyone a wonderful, beautiful, meaningful Shabbos. We count down to Purim. Days should be filled with lots of simcha, lots of joy. We should all be zochet to merit, to recognize all the brachos in our lives. And I don't see Rina Zisel Moskowitz on today. She must be busy this morning or throwing a tantrum. And so I wish everyone a wonderful, beautiful Shabbos.